Agency owners, it's time for a new episode of the Agency Blueprint, the number one podcast for agency owners looking to build systems to simplify and gain reliable profit growth, while also reducing stress and getting their personal life back. I'm your host, Robert Patton, international bestselling author, agency scale partner, and founder of Creative Agency Success. If you enjoy this episode, do me a favor and hit that subscribe button to make sure that you never miss an episode and help keep the show at the top of the charts so it can be found by more agency owners like you. And now for the show. Today, we are joined by Masood Hassan, and he's a first-generation immigrant from Bangladesh. His family struggled financially after immigrating to the U.S., so he learned how to code at 12 years old so he could build a website for extra income. His parents wanted a doctor in the family, and as a good son as they are, he became one. During med school, he launched a startup called A Sense of Life, and 3 years later sold it for $10 million. He then finished his residency and decided to quit medicine. He then started Q and did Y Combinator, S20, and raised $1.6 million in funding to build the operating system for agencies, the system that he wished he had when he was building websites when he was 12 years old. Welcome to the show, Masood.
Thanks, Robert. Glad to be here.
Well, to start off, I just wanted to say you're obviously such an underachiever, med school while growing a business and then selling it while in residency. You must have just been so bored and had like just an incredible amount of spare time.
Oh, it's totally 100%. You know, my organization skills are very, very bad.
So for everyone listening, in preparation for the episode, we chatted about Q and the data that Masood was collecting. And there were some findings that we were chatting about that I've seen myself anecdotally with agencies, and that he had actual data. And all of you knowing me and the data nerd that I am, I said that we absolutely had a chat about this and was just really excited about it. And so this is the first episode of a two-part series that we're going to be doing on this season. And the first topic that we're going to be talking about today is client churn. And so the first thing, that just to give us kind of a frame around it, what are the things that you're seeing and some of the top three reasons, if you will, as to why agencies are experiencing churn in the first place?
So firstly, I would say the main reason for churn does differ on the size of your agency as well. But I would say the top reason is lack of clear communication with the client, like giving them routine feedback on how you're doing on the project that you're working on with them. And honestly, it's just you need it like once or twice a week to even do that. But one of the biggest one I've seen recently is lack of low quality work. And this is really common when it's being outsourced to like freelancers and there's no one-on-one coordination going on with the client. So the brief is bad, the request is not, you know, taken too hard and finished properly. And third, I would say mismatched expectations. The client is expecting results of, let's say, $10,000 a month of work, but the ones you're delivering is like $2,000, $3,000 work, and it's taking like a whole month to deliver it instead of the 2 weeks that you maybe promised. So yeah, those are, I would say, the top three reasons. And keep in mind, the way we're gathering this the whole data set is off of all of the data that we've acquired through InQ of clients communicating with the agency's communicating with the client, sending work for review. Because we're an all-in-one platform, we kind of have access to a lot of data.
Yeah.
So to give you some context, we've analyzed close to 1.9 million comments of on work delivered, 243,000 comments from clients telling on the request and stuff. And so all this data, we fed it to an AI, and we can basically ask the AI these kind of questions, which I've gathered before this call for you.
Yeah, that's just so cool. The advent of AI, data, big data, and just data in the first place, I just think that allows for so much clarity in decision making. I wanted to hit on a couple of the things that you've shared, and I'm curious on your experience, or I can expand myself a little bit. But the communication component, I think, is really, really important. I talk about that a lot, in that communication is key to a relationship, and any relationship that we have in life, whether it is a client and business relationship or a personal relationship. And I find it so interesting that agencies have traditionally just kind of gone dark in the work that they're doing. And in fact, one of the things that I found really interesting, and I want to say this was November 2023, that an article was published by Adweek that said that within the next 6 months, that the vast majority of brands, it was like some 60-70% of brands, were planning on firing their agencies within the next 6 months. And the number one reason was that they were not communicating based on the strategy that they were actually employing, and that it felt like the relationship that they had had with the agency was more like a pair of hands. And I'm curious to see whether you see that same type of thing more on like the SMB market rather than the enterprise, which Adweek was talking about.
So we see this more commonly with the lack of communication with the SMB market. It does happen with enterprise market, but if the price point is very, very high, usually there is a dedicated account manager whose sole job is to really keep in full contact with a client or roles or desks of clients and keep them updated. Yes. We've seen the successful ones do about 2 to 3 updates a week. And keep in mind, these updates is not complicated. It doesn't need to be a full-blown, you know, 5-10 minute Loom video showing everything they've done. Sometimes just saying, hey, 32% finished so far. Last week was 22%. Just this kind of stuff alone is really, really good enough for SMBs and enterprise. But yeah, the churn rate for SMBs is much higher than enterprise for sure. And communication is one of the big factors.
I think that you said something that's quite astute, because when you think about where a lot of agencies, I think, go wrong is they think that communication needs to be this elaborate form of communication with a client, whether it's a live meeting or a long email or a Loom video, which I'm very much a fan of, that it can be actually quite concise. And the kind of factor piece of it is that if you were to think about it on your own personal level, you create anxiety around the area of unknown, better or worse in human kind of interaction, even with each other, is that the unknown becomes scary. Mm-hmm. And that unknown can create for a tumultuousness, and their perception is reality, whether you are working and diligently doing things. And if they're unaware of it, it creates anxiety. And then it ultimately leads to churn because they're anxious about it. And that's not a good experience from a client. Then one of the things that you said that the other reason was low quality work, which I suppose is not surprising, but also disappointing, I guess, if you will, because it's the idea, I think, largely, and I wonder whether there is a distinction, and I suppose it kind of takes me a bit into my next question, on the productization of the agency services, and if you see that same lower quality of work happening with more productized agencies, and whether churn rates are impacted by that different type of business. And the reason, I suppose, that I'm going into this next is that obviously, if you have a larger gamut of work that you're doing, it's harder to be the best in class at everything that you're doing if you're doing a huge barrage of things. But if you're really specialized, then it allows for you to be better at what it is that you're doing and have a less likelihood of low-quality work. That doesn't completely remove the potential, but should remove some of the potential, if you will. And I'm curious what you've seen there.
So specialization is obviously very important. It does reduce churn because the reason why is because the clients get what they're expecting. And so if you specialize, let's say, in Webflow and you don't specialize in video, and so you're just not going to get work for video, which is totally fine because you can get work for Webflow design and you're going to deliver really good work. When it comes to prioritized services, the churn is much, much, much higher. It is much higher. We've seen churn for non-prioritized services to be around less than 5%. But when it comes to prioritized services, it's between 10 to 15%. And it does actually differ based on what industry you're in. So for example, if you're in the video space, high churn rate. If you're in the SEO space, very low churn rate. And I think the reason why for the SEO, at least what we've seen, is because it takes time to ramp up the SEO and the companies are usually able to see an ROI from it. While video, it's more like you don't see that much ROI right away and sometimes they don't have much more work. Web development is the same aspect, very high churn rate. And one of the, I think, reasons for that, which we looked at, was this has a high pause rate. So clients are constantly pausing. And the reason is simple. When you get web development done, you need time to iterate on it, get client feedback. And that's why there's a high pause rate and a high cancellation rate.
Interesting. I suppose this piece of information is different than what I would have assumed. But I suppose what you're saying makes sense in that when you're saying a productized service that one has a long tail impact to the business, it becomes more difficult for the client to understand the immediate impact, and then it becomes a lower priority item. Mm-hmm. What would you say are ways to combat that specifically in the productized service market and having something that is a bit more, maybe, but is it actually, let me ask this question before we go there. with productized services are you finding in the data points actually based on more deliverable focused agencies that are like, hey, these are what we're doing every single month or every single quarter or every single week, the exact same things? Is that to the degree of productization that you're talking about versus more consultative productized services?
Actually, most of the prioritized service agencies, they wait for the client to submit a request for them. So the client will submit a request for a video or a design, and there's a brief behind it, and we go back and forth on that. And that's how they deliver. That's how they know what to do. And the best agencies that we've seen, the ones that make millions a year, they are very proactive. So they analyze when a client is not submitting enough work per week. And they reach out to them. Hey, we see room for improvements here. Why don't we just do it since you're still on a subscription? Now, this might look like to a lot of people, hey, why are we just adding additional work to our plate? But in reality, what you're doing is being proactive and telling the client, hey, we're here for you. Here's some things we can do for you. So you feel like you're still getting value from your $5,000 a month.
Yeah. Again, that piece of it is not surprising, I guess, but also, again, disappointing in the fact that we don't recognize the fact that, so it's like this idea, and I've seen this happen so many times with agencies, is that the client, the squeaky wheel, is the one that gets the oil, right? That gets the attention. And so the client that is submitting the work is the one that's ultimately getting the most attention. The one that's screaming and are unhappy is the one that gets the most attention. And so it's kind of just this big cycle of you trying to put out fires with the client rather than actually being proactive and trying to drive impact to the business, because that is what the client is there for. And if you're not doing that, then they're going to go, and it makes perfect sense that they would.
Exactly. So if they don't see the value that they're paying per month, they're going to leave. And we see this happening way too often in Q. People, some of our customers will come to us, ask us for this kind of data and what we recommend. And, you know, there's more than one way to skin a cat. If you're going enterprise customers, you can actually get away with charging a crap ton of money to them. Based on what you deliver. But if you're going for like a funded startup, they're going to be much more frugal. SMBs are going to be much more frugal. They're going to want to get every bang for their buck. I highly recommend just going for enterprise.
Well, they've got their challenges as well. So I don't know that I universally
say that. Number one, yes.
We've started a loop of conversation that I think is interesting. This idea of consultative and productized, but even within the productization to be a bit more consultative in the work that ultimately needs to be done, and coming in and saying, making suggestions to the client of potentially here's where you should be focused next, of what here's areas for improvement. And I'm curious to see whether you have a distinction in the data points that the clients or the agencies that are reaching out to their clients on a more frequent basis and being more consultative, what kind of impact that has had to churn.
So it did reduce churn by, I want to say, 5 to 7% for high growth agencies. So these are high growth agencies where we categorize it as a team size at least of 20 to and above. Okay. And their average monthly subscription amount will be around $5,000 to $6,000 a month. They usually put one project manager in charge of this part just to do complete reach out. There's also their job to analyze how often clients are submitting new requests and how often they're delivering the work. We will be building a future to automate this, but right now they are doing it manually to find those clients that might be high churn. So eventually we will be releasing a way to where on the list of clients, you'll have a little indicator that says high churn reason, which, you know, will be based off how often they're submitting requests, comments, like tone of comment, that sort of stuff.
That is so interesting. And I cannot wait to see. I'd love to be part of just seeing behind the curtain of that. So I guess this is a very wide open question, because we've talked about multiple different implications around churn. And there's some already pieces of discussion that we've had around ways to combat it. Mm-hmm. But what would you say are the most effective ways for an agency to combat churn outside of just communication, or even the types of communication if it's all in communication?
So I would say number one, onboarding. Onboarding is probably number one. And here's the thing. A lot of people think onboarding is really, having a quick call like this, explaining how quickly you're going to deliver work, that sort of stuff, which is, you're supposed to do that. But one of the things in onboarding that they really, really miss on is just getting their brand down. What is the client's expectation in terms of design? Do they want something like linear.app, or do they want something more consumer focused design? These are the like the simple questions of asking, hey, can you give us like three or four designs that you really like that really will allow your team to build exactly what they're looking for at the end of the day? And it's something that just people just completely ignore and miss out. So having an onboarding call, figuring out what type of design your client wants, it's really important, and just asking for examples. Because most clients are terrible, and I mean terrible, at explaining what they want. They just want to pop, want it to pop and look good, which, you know, in the design world doesn't really make sense. So that's where onboarding comes in, and asking for examples.
You've touched on two things that I just was having a hard time not just hysterically laughing at. One, the concept that your client is going to be able to give you the direction. And let's face it, for all of you listeners out there, right? And you've heard me say this before, and I will say it again and emphasize it here, in that your clients are not designers, at least the vast majority of them. They don't have the expertise to guide you in the first place. They haven't sat and put together a brief in a meaningful way. The ability for them to be able to provide feedback, even in the design, their feedback is going to be, in most instances, I like it or I don't. But they can't tell you why they don't. They just don't. And that's because they are not you and haven't spent their life in design.
That's why they hire you.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Why they need you. And if you're not able to actually have communication that allows for them to feel comfortable throughout that process and allow for them to be part of it and even see their fingerprint in it and also be able to make it more comfortable for them, you have a massive gap in your client experience. But the other piece that I have had multiple episodes of the podcast about is specifically around onboarding and the experience that the client has. I'm going to push to like the distinction, right, of like staying at like the Howard Johnson or, you know, the Days Inn versus staying at, you know, the St. Regis or the Ritz-Carlton. When you check in, the experience, they're giving you a drink. I mean, they give you a call after you're in the room. In a lot of instances, are handwritten notes and maybe a little bit of a snack, maybe a bottle of wine that's sitting there for you. Like the experience of checking into some of these nicer hotels is purposeful to make you have a memorable, fun experience. Mm-hmm. And there's data from, and I don't remember the report that I read about it, but the data points around this is that the vast majority of clients are determining whether they're going to stick around within that first 90 days. The experience that you've left, that memory that you've left, that feeling that you've left in them at that moment is pivotal. And I love that you have validated a lot of what I had been thinking, in that that piece of it is very important. As far as you mentioned frequency, that 2 to 3 times a week of communication, I'm curious around, are there other things around the frequency of optimal communication and client happiness, of things that you should be doing? And also, does that continue on forever or does that dissipate over time? So if a client has been one for 3 years, do they still need updates 3 times a week, that sort of thing? And do you see any kind of pieces around that?
Yeah, it really depends on the frequency of work that you're working with. If you're working on something that's very high value, nearing the deadline, you want to give them more updates. But if they've been a client on a, let's say, a monthly basis for a very long time, every week, once an update is more than fine. Especially if you have a good relationship with a client and they trust that you have really good work that you deliver on time. If it's a new client, you want to keep that communication bar pretty high. And like I said, the communication really needs to be pretty simple. They don't want a blog on the update. Trust me, they won't read it. They're going to just skim it and look for some kind of number, or like some kind of indicator or a screenshot. That's all they were looking for. A screenshot, a percentage of how far you are with the work. If you have any questions, just ask them the questions, and that's kind of it. What we notice is if you don't send like any kind of like screenshots, or if you don't send any kind of like progress on the work and you just say, hey, still working on it, it just creates a lot of back and forth questions. And this return will waste your time and their time
and theirs,
and give them a really bad experience at the end of the day.
So interesting. I have a kind of two-pronged question, I suppose. And this is kind of dovetailing off of one of the things that you said, that you have, you're building a component to queue around indicators of clients that are at high risk for churn, which again, I really do want to see. But I'm curious to see the pieces around the development of that. What have you found around like specific language, tone that either the agency's using or that the client's using, or any like specific type of behaviors or metrics that indicate that churn is potential?
Yeah, I actually wrote some of it down. What you want to do when you're, well, this is what we've seen the best agencies do that are making millions a year. Their tone is much more friendlier, emoji packed, interestingly.
Interesting.
Okay. They actually love doing emojis. Okay. And just the speed of reply to them, it's really important. It does. Like you can reply 1 or 24 hours later. That's one thing. If you're replying to them within 15, 30 minutes, because you have push notification set up with your Slack, fantastic. That's going to actually make your clients a lot happier. So that's the kind of things we see. The other thing is there sometimes will be disagreements where the client says, this looks like trash, or I hate this work, I don't like this. And it's really up to you as the company to decide how you want to handle that forward. Do you want to just tell them they're wrong, or do you want to kindly explain to them, hey, this is our thought process behind this. If you don't like this kind of design process, maybe we need to hop on a quick call so we can go over some examples of things you do like, so we can reiterate on this. It's really important to like understand that you don't want to just, you know, be an asshole back to the client. That's going to just, you know, piss them off and make a churn. Which, and you know, like this seems like common sense, right, Robert? It still happens. I see it all the time. And then the client's doing a chargeback.
So it's ridiculous, but interesting. I have to admit that you made me feel really old when you were saying that emojis are a thing that are great in communication, because I would not enjoy that. It definitely is not my thing.
Sometimes it depends on clients. If you're working with startup founders, they don't care. They don't care. They love the emoji stuff. You know,
so
just give them a thumbs up on their comments. They love it.
That's so funny. The other thing that you mentioned, which is counter to a lot of advice that I give, so I wanted to dive down into this piece of it, and I'm curious around the operational component of it, if you have the information, but the response time of within 24 hours, generally my advice is the same day, not 24 hours later, but the 15 minutes piece, because that creates for a lot of interrupting throughout the day. Mm-hmm. And so my curiosity around that being a meaningful way of being able to combat churn, do these agencies typically have someone that is purely dedicated to client communication so that they can respond that quickly to things, so that that is their job versus working on a design project and then needing to respond, working on a campaign strategy and then needing to respond within the midst of it? Because that creates for one, I think, lower quality of work from being distracted and higher levels of stress for the team in doing so, which then results in team churn, which is also incredibly expensive.
They always have someone dedicated to it. They always have an account manager dedicated to it. Well, here's one thing interesting that I did find about these account managers that deals with the clients, communicates with the clients. Typically, they don't want the freelancers to communicate with the client and the updates. So all the comments usually left by them is team-only view on Q. What we notice is that the best agencies do not outsource the account manager part. They always hire full-time, in-house, and so if the agency owner is in America, they usually will hire someone in America to do the account managing.
Connectiveness, all that,
Exactly. And so, but they will hire freelancers or contractors from all over the world.
Sure. Yep.
But within 15 minutes, it is hard to do. If you're a solo designer, if you're a solo agency owner, this is very hard to do. So 15 minutes, it's not a, you know, a requirement. Sometimes an hour or 2 hours is totally fine. 24 hours, responding after 24 hours, is a bit of a problem. We see it. People who does respond after 24 hours, even sometimes, you know, 2-3 days, they churn really, really quickly. They just don't, the clients just doesn't feel valued. And, you know, like, and like I said, the reply could be, hey, I'm currently working on this. I'll give you a feedback tomorrow. Within 15 minutes, that's it. That's all you need to do sometimes.
Yeah. The interesting thing that, and I have said this many times, the client ultimately, while they know that they're not your only client and they don't actually want to be, they should still feel like they are, and that they're getting that much attention and dedicated support. And how do you go about doing that without creating for operational inefficiencies or operational roadblocks? The other thing that you hit on that I just wanted to like double tap on for a second and just make a comment on is the feedback piece around design. I just think it's so interesting and incredibly important that so many agencies, design-focused brand agencies, that just show the work without the rationale. And it's not like you're creating the design and it's not like you just chose this color because you were in this mood this day and so you chose the color. You chose it because of their core demographic, because of the brand, because of X, Y, or Z. You chose this user journey. You chose this design aesthetic. You chose the CTA placement to allow for conversion. Like, there was a rationale that you had around the choice that you made. And if you're not sharing that with the client when you're showing the work, then you're doing both your agency and the client a disservice. I have to admit, this conversation is so incredibly interesting to me. I mean, from a data point to a relationship point, like, it's all the things that I revel in and just have like so much excitement around, the like human psychology pieces, but the data-backed components to it. Like, I just think it's so incredibly fun. I guess I have a personal question.
Yeah.
Are you enjoying as much of pulling out of these data pieces from Q and diving into all of it? I mean, you being a science person, I would imagine, with you being an NDE.
I do. Listen, I do. One of the reasons why we did this is because we want to eventually like like, you know, release some of this data and teach people how to have successful clients. Because Qt, we're free until you get a client platform. And so if the client is not successful, then we're not really successful. And so it's really important that we have this data. And it's also training data for our AI agent to help the agency be really successful. Hmm. But yeah, I do love it. Some of the data is really like sad. Sometimes I even reach out to some of the agency owners like, hey, listen, we have some data on your clients. Just to be brief, this is it. Your choice to whether you want to take this as constructive feedback and act on it. Majority of the time, every single time, they're usually like, oh my God, thank you so much. We didn't really realize this. I guess I didn't train my PM enough, or I guess I was being an asshole, didn't have lunch that day. So I'll work on
it. I was hangry.
Yeah. Hangry is like one of the biggest factors.
Oh man.
For me, it is at least.
I definitely am a hangry person. My husband has definitely many instances where I've been unreasonably hangry, just like handed me a snack. I'm like, oh, did you do that because I was in a bad mood? So yeah, it's definitely a thing. I've enjoyed this conversation. I look forward to our follow-up episode as well. If listeners are looking to learn a bit more about Qt or get in touch with you, how can they find you?
Yeah, so if you want, just go to useq.com. We take customer service very, very seriously. So we have 24-hour live chat, bottom right corner, send us a message. I handle pretty much majority of all the chat, so I just like to be close to my customers. So if you want to get in contact with me or talk to me, just go to the website and just click on the chat and ask me a question about the data if you want. I'm happy to answer it too.
Really cool. And check it out, everybody. I really enjoyed the conversation today. Thank you so much for joining us, and I look forward to the next episode.
Awesome. Thanks, Robert.
Hey, everyone. Thank you so much for listening in today. With all of the shifts in the industry, it is easy to feel overwhelmed or unsure of your next move. So I'm not here to try to sell you anything. I just want to give back and guide you through the uncertainty. Whether you're navigating new trends or just need some clarity, we're here to listen and offer advice. Head to creativeagencysuccess.com/chat to book a free 50-minute chat with an agency mentor who can provide you with a fresh perspective. Let's figure out the best steps for your agency's growth together.